Well, welcome everyone. I'd like to call this meeting to order. For just so you make sure you're in the right room, we're in the Housing Policy Committee. And we will start with a roll call. I'll turn it over to Heather.
Thank you, Chair Allen. We know that Alder Matthews and Paul Aylesworth are excused this evening, and so I'll take roll for the other members. Alder Ohowitz, Jillian Hayes, Laurel Nowak, Hannah Renfro,
present.
Mike Tarby,
present.
And Chair Heather Allen,
present. Our next item, our first item, is actually public comment. A few folks, is the approval of minutes. May I have a motion on the minutes from May 22nd?
Move to approve the minutes from May 22nd.
Thank you.
I'd like to second the motion.
Thank you so much. All those in favor, or is there any discussion about the minutes? Let me ask that first. Okay. All those in favor of approving the minutes from May 22nd? It appears to be unanimous. Thank you. All right. And now we are ready for public comment. And just to clarify, we have several items of interest to the public on the agenda. If you want to speak to any of the ordinances, please hold that comment until we bring up that agenda item. But right now we're taking any public comment that is not about the ordinances or anything on the agenda. Do we have any public comment that falls into that category?
We do not.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. And now we can move on to new business. Item number two, Housing Policy Committee role staff presentation.
Okay, thank you. This will be short. My name is Heather Stouter. Again, I'm with the Department of Planning, Community, and Economic Development. And this item was actually on our agenda on May 22nd and was the one that we referred to this evening. Just quickly wanted to reiterate the main parts of the Housing Policy Committee role, and we'll keep this brief this evening. At our last meeting, the mayor talked a lot about elements of the role of the committee. And so a lot of this will be review, but the main purposes of housing policy is to help provide guidance to staff and decision makers at the city in furthering Madison's housing goals, importantly provide a forum for housing input and discussion, and help refine our communication as a city through data and reports. This is something that I'll recall that the mayor talked a lot about at the May meeting. Really want to utilize the expertise among you all to help refine messages about housing to the community, whether that be refining, better conveying housing data and housing need, or better conveying some of the policies and programs that the city has in place or is forming in order to meet those needs. And then finally, the Housing Policy Committee will make recommendations on policies and programs that are introduced at the Common Council and referred to this committee. And we have our first examples of those on this evening's agenda. So listening, learning, helping to communicate housing data. I think the best vehicle for this that we have at this point is the mayor's Housing Forward initiative. And we talked a lot last month about all of the various goals and policies and programs that are part of that broader initiative. And so we'll often be coming back to that and referencing Housing Forward when you have policies before you, or when we're combing through housing data and seeking your guidance and how best to communicate it. And then perhaps less common, but important, is the role of making recommendations on legislation. And this is, again, very pertinent to this evening's meeting. Often the Common Council, through one or more alders, will introduce legislation that they then refer to a number of boards, committees, and commissions across the city. Often there is a lead committee, and in the case of the Housing Policy Committee, usually you'll be making recommendations to the Plan Commission or the city's Community Development Block Grant Committee as lead committees before items are returned back to the Common Council. And I just want to share three quick examples, and then we'll be through it. This evening's items are a great example of this. When the council introduces zoning changes to Madison General Ordinances, they'll refer those to the Plan Commission and often the Housing Policy Committee as well. You as a body will see those first, just like you are tonight, and provide recommendations to the Plan Commission in order to provide their formal recommendation to the Common Council. And so the work done in this committee could include simple recommendations such as we recommend that the council adopt the ordinances as written, or we as a body recommend that the Plan Commission considers these amendments to those ordinances as they're written. But ultimately, your recommendations will be forwarded to the Plan Commission, who will then take those and work with them to refine their recommendation to the Common Council. Another example might be policies related to landlord and tenant relationships. We do have several threads of the Madison General Ordinance that pertain to landlord and tenant relationships. And those, again, would be introduced at council and referred to the Housing Policy Committee, perhaps to go straight back to the Common Council. And then finally, another example, our Community Development Block Grant Group has a required analysis of impediments to fair housing report that they must present and basically the city must adopt every few years. And the Housing Policy Committee in the future will be important kind of in the chain of approval of that report every few years. In this particular case, the CDBG or Community Development Block Grant Committee would be the lead and make final recommendations to the Common Council. So those are three different examples. Again, the one most pertinent to what you'll see on your agenda this evening is again here with this slide, zoning changes introduced at council to housing policy, onto Plan Commission, and then back to council for final action. I'll stop there and happy to take any questions, or we can move along to future items.
Are there any questions? Seeing none, I think we can move on with the agenda.
Sure.
Okay, next on the agenda, we have items 3, 4, and 5, which will be discussed together, beginning with a staff presentation, and then we will do and then public comment. Thank you so much.
That's okay. You keep telling me what to do because I don't know what.
Okay. Good afternoon, everybody. I've met you all very briefly at your first meeting. So just a quick reminder, my name is Megan Tuttle, and I am the director for the planning division in the Department of Planning, Community, and Economic Development. So the team that works in the planning division works on both long-range planning for the city, so setting policies through our comprehensive plan, as well as area plans, and exploring particularly housing policy issues at the citywide and area plan level through those planning processes. And then works on a big part of what we do is works through the development review process. So specifically for the administration of our codes related to conditional use processes and other discretionary reviews that go before the Urban Design Commission, Landmarks Commission, et cetera. Heather, can you come help me for 1 second? I'll keep talking really quickly and see if we can get these screens switched. The work that you are going to hear about tonight was prepared in response to the request to identify solutions that will help us move the Housing Forward initiative forward and several of our goals within the housing initiative forward. Our team in planning worked closely with Jacob and Jenny, who are here as representatives of the zoning team, also in the Department of Planning, Community and Economic Development, to work together to think through how we could propose some changes to our zoning code that would help us implement some of those goals from the Housing Forward initiative. No worries. Just having trouble getting the presentation to show up on the screen that you can see instead of the screen that I can see. In your packet, you have the presentation, so I'll just get started by talking about the fact that the proposals we're going to be talking about tonight relate primarily to the first goal under the Housing Forward initiative, which is about increasing housing choice. Specifically, agenda item number 3, the first ordinance that we're going to be talking about, supports the goal to pursue code and process changes that help support missing middle housing. So small housing types such as duplexes, townhomes, and small apartments that can fit into the existing context of the landscape of the city. Thank you so much. The second amendment that we'll talk about is related to the goal to look for ways to make our lot and subdivision processes simpler to help create new lots for homes to be created on within those existing neighborhoods. And then finally, the third ordinance that we'll talk about relates to primarily to this goal about simplifying our zoning standards to support infill housing where our policies have indicated that it's appropriate, in this case for downtown. And I will note that this change also relates to that first goal about missing middle housing as well. So jumping in, the first ordinance proposes to allow duplexes and twin homes, I'll just call them two units for the rest of this presentation, in all of our residential zoning districts. The city has 15 residential zoning districts, and each of those districts identifies what types of housing options could be permissible and under what kind of development frameworks. This ordinance specifically adds these two unit housing types to the list of permitted uses in 6 of the zoning districts where they have generally not been allowed in the past. This expands upon some work that was done in 2023. If you're familiar with the city's adoption of a transit-oriented development overlay zone, which was intended to help us support more housing development in close proximity to our high frequency transit routes. Some of these zoning districts that we're talking about in this amendment overlap with that zone. And in those places, we have allowed 2-unit buildings for a couple of years under that framework, but this expands upon that policy change and makes it applicable to these zoning districts where they apply citywide. And again, as I noted before, this is really intended to help support small infill housing in existing neighborhoods citywide. This map is a general reflection of how this policy would apply to different residential areas in the city. The areas that are represented in orange represents about a third of the residential area, residentially zoned area, I should say, in Madison today. This represents areas where 2-unit buildings have been permitted to date, either because the underlying zoning district that they're in allows 2-unit buildings, or because they are within that transit-oriented development overlay that I mentioned before. The areas that are identified in yellow, or about the other 2/3 of these residentially zoned areas, are the areas where this ordinance would enable 2-unit buildings newly if this is enacted. I think it's important to note here that this map represents a number of different neighborhood types that have been built and developed over time. And so I think what we can imagine as we think about 2-unit buildings is that they could take different forms. They could be in the form of a stacked 2-flat like we might see on Jenny Street. They could take the form of a new side-by-side twin home that maybe we see in some of the newer Viridian subdivisions. They could even take the form of somebody converting a part of their existing home or adding on to their home to create another unit in some of our more traditional, maybe 60s, 80s era subdivisions where that might just be an easier way to achieve a 2-unit building. But it's important to note that with this ordinance, while we're happy to be able to support a policy that enables more housing choice citywide, it's unlikely that this will create significant transformation quickly. This is really a policy that enables more housing choice over the long term in all of our neighborhoods. The next ordinance is about creating more backyard lots. This is actually something that has been allowed in Madison for some time. You may hear this referred to sometimes as a flag lot, or in the case of our zoning, in the case of our codes, it's called a deep residential lot. But ultimately, this is about enabling lots that are large enough to be able to be divided into two or more lots that could enable new lots for housing to be created. And again, this is about housing choice and housing types that could be more accessible in the city's neighborhoods. This graphic just quickly illustrates how this would work. If somebody has a lot that meets the basic specifications for being able to be divided, that back lot could be created in a configuration like what you see here. This is a really kind of like perfect condition, but you can see why it gets its name of a flag lot. That blue shaded area kind of resembles a flag on a flagpole. And ultimately, that lot then becomes a place where a new home could be created. As I mentioned, this has been enabled in Madison for some time, but we don't have a lot of examples from recent years because the process and the standards for being able to divide a lot have been pretty tough to accommodate. This is an example of a lot division from about 20 years ago on Norman Way out on the west side. This was a roughly 1 acre lot with a home that was towards the back of the lot. You can see that it was divided into two and a new lot was created in front of the existing home. A new home was created in front of the existing one after that. This is an example of a more recent lot division that the Plan Commission has seen. Again, a very large lot. This is a 2 acre lot. While nothing has been built here yet, this is an example of a lot division where you can see how a new space was being created for that property, for a new home to be created. This ordinance proposes just two changes with regard to the lot size and standards for when a division could be possible. At the front of the lot, the pole part of the flag currently is required to be 30 feet wide. So you can imagine if someone is required to have their basic lot dimensions plus an additional 30 feet. This has really been limited to many of the largest lots in the city that had previously been eligible for division. So we're proposing through this ordinance that pole part of the flag be reduced from a 30-foot width down to a 10-foot width. This helps open up more flexibility for these types of lots to be created while maintaining a sufficient area for a driveway to be created to make that critical access point from the lot that's being created to the street. The other change that's proposed as part of this is to standardize the minimum depth of any lot in these areas. Today, our ordinances may require either 80 feet or 100 feet of lot depth per lot, depending on which zoning district property is in. So this standardizes that minimum lot depth at 80 feet. So for some areas, this effectively means that we're reducing the minimum lot depth that would be necessary to consider whether a lot division could be possible from 200 feet down to 160 feet. I'll note here that other zoning standards still have to be met as part of these lot divisions. But one of the things that we're hoping to do is just make it a little bit more possible for lots to meet the basic standards. We are also making a change to the process for how these lot divisions could be reviewed by the city. Today, any of these lot divisions are required to be reviewed by the Plan Commission under our conditional use standards. We have standards in our zoning code We have very detailed standards in our subdivision code, and we have a process that's guided by both state and local ordinances related to how we actually divide property. It's called a CSM. That we apply to these. So we're proposing that the Plan Commission does not have to review these in all cases, but rather we rely on the standards for when a lot division really needs the Plan Commission's approval to guide that process. This is a very simple map that shows lots that meet some of the basic size requirements under this proposal that could enable them to explore whether a lot division is possible. Notably, we're estimating that probably generously around 3,200 lots could be eligible for considering a division under this change based on their lot size, their lot width, and their lot depth. Obviously, there's a lot of factors that go into that related to where existing buildings are on a lot, how to meet other zoning standards, but this is just gives you a rough sense of what we think might be possible. And again, this will not happen overnight, but provides some more flexibility as a long-term option for the future. The final change that we'll talk about tonight is to simplify the development review process for small and mid-sized projects within our downtown, within the downtown core specifically. And how we're proposing to do this is by raising the threshold for a conditional use review to be more consistent with other mixed use areas in the city. Or said another way, we're trying to create a more permissive or a more by right process for some of these smaller developments within our downtown. Downtown is unique in that through our planning work, through very detailed planning work, and the incorporation of that planning into our zoning code, we have specific, very specific zoning standards for development in downtown. It's one of the few areas in the city where we actually have specific height limits in the zoning code that are mapped and apply to developments. We have specific design standards that apply to all developments in the downtown. And we have design guidelines that are a supplement to our zoning code that are used by the Urban Design Commission when they're reviewing proposals for development in some of our downtown zoning districts. So what this is trying to do is just take one piece of this, one piece of the process that exists out of the process, really, and lets us rely on those detailed administrative and other reviews that we have in place to support the incorporation of small and mid-sized developments within our downtown. This is a super simple map of the zoning districts that apply within the downtown core. And this dark boundary is the boundary of the downtown core as it's defined in our zoning code, just so you know. We're gonna talk about four of these zoning districts, the downtown core and urban mixed use district, which are our more intense districts in the downtown area. And then the downtown residential one and downtown residential two. One thing I'll note here, if you're able to see the colors on the screen or on your screen in front of you, there is a zoning district downtown called Plan Development. This is a little bit of a misnomer. This is actually a bunch of individual site-specific zoning districts. So this is a tool that had been used historically quite often in the city because of the evolution of our zoning code kind of catching up to the way development happens. And we have a lot of properties that are subject to their own site-specific zoning ordinances, which you can see in that light gray color. These changes will not change anything about those plan developments. It really relates only to these ones that we're going to talk about today. So within the downtown core and urban mixed-use zoning district, today, the threshold for when a project needs to be reviewed by the Plan Commission as a conditional use is for anything that's over 4 stories or 20,000 square feet. In some cases in the UMX district, this purple district, a project may also require conditional use review if it's more than 8 units. This is an example of a project that could have been a conditional use under these current standards. This is a building on East Washington. Just gives you a sense of the relative scale of buildings that we're talking about that require conditional use under today's code. This ordinance proposes changing that conditional use threshold to anything that's over six stories. So if a project is six stories or fewer, regardless of how many units are in it, it could be reviewed as a by right or a permitted use, subject to all of the other requirements in the zoning code and our urban design guidelines. This is an example of a project that was built on East Wilson Street that could become a permitted use under this code. This is another example on North Webster, a slightly different building, but also an example of what could become a permitted use. One thing that we've been thinking about as we're proposing this threshold is how downtown, as a major regional growth center in our comprehensive plan, relates to other growth centers that are identified in our comprehensive plan in other parts of the city. And you can see here just generally, these are some of the thresholds for when a project is required to go through a conditional use review in places like the East and West Town Malls, which are major transitioning growth centers identified in our comprehensive plan, or even related to what the conditional use thresholds are in some of our more neighborhood mixed use areas like along Willie or Monroe or Atwood Avenue. Based on recent activity that we've seen in the downtown, specifically going through our conditional use review process, I think it's important to note that many of the projects that we're seeing are still coming in much bigger than the threshold we're proposing. So many would still be required to go through that conditional use review process. We estimate that if development in the future reflects development that we've seen in the past, about 25% of the projects may not have to go through the conditional use review in the future. And I'm going to step back, sorry to give anyone a little bit of whiplash. There's one important detail that I forgot to mention when I was presenting this slide, which is what this dotted line represents on the slide. We know that there's a lot of sensitivity to how our historic buildings and historic parts of our downtown will evolve in the future. So we are not proposing to change the thresholds for conditional use review for properties that directly front on State Street and the 100 block of King Street. We will be starting a downtown planning process in the near term where we can explore how we guide development in the future. But this proposed change would apply to developments off of those two streets for now. All right, so then when we look at the downtown residential districts, these are areas where the code changes are intended to help support some more of that transitional missing middle housing type. These are neighborhoods that surround the more intensive parts of downtown. So within the downtown residential district one, the current threshold that requires a conditional use review is anything that's 5 units or more. We're proposing that that transition to 13 units or more, or greater than 12 units. And in the downtown residential two, you can see here, kind of on the outer edges of downtown, the current threshold is anything over 8 units, and we're proposing that that go to anything over 36 units. So I'll just wrap up here by saying tonight we're talking about these changes. And as Heather mentioned, we are happy to answer questions and hear feedback that you have about these proposals as they make their way towards the Plan Commission and Common Council. Your recommendation tonight will be one that will be provided to the Plan Commission when they discuss this on July 7th. And we're also having a community meeting next Wednesday, July 2nd, to hear other comments and questions about this ordinance as well. So I'll end there. Thank you. I'm going to leave these slides up just in case we want to reference them for anything.
Okay, thank you so much. Are there any questions from the folks on the committee? Okay, we can turn now to public comment. Did I miss you? Sorry.
Oh, that's good.
Okay. So we have some members of the public interested in speaking to any of the agenda items that were just presented, items 3, 4, and 5. Do you need to call their names or?
First, we have Dalton Lee from District 4 registering in support and wishing to speak.
Hello. Hi. My name is Dalton Lee. Like it was mentioned, I live downtown in Mr. Vervier's district, and I just wanted to speak out on behalf of these proposals. I think all three of them are a move in the right direction and that they'll make housing more affordable. I did have one question about, there was a document attached to the stuff for this meeting for proposal 88736. And it showed that the max occupancy of a house on the lot, that percentage would not change. For a lot of the districts, it looked like it hovered around 50% or 35% of the lot can be taken up by a residence. And so I was just wondering if it had been considered to increase that percentage, because it seems like that would unduly limit the number of lots that could be redeveloped with a accessible dwelling unit. And it seems like unnecessarily restrictive if we're already making this change. And then the other comment I wanted to make was that we saw the numbers earlier. Sorry, let me pull up the slides again. We saw that the development was going to change to 4 stories, 6 stories, or 8 stories, depending where in town and what development district it's changing. And I just thought that some of those numbers should be increased because it was mentioned that like about 25% of proposed developments would not have to go through the more rigorous process. And it seems to me like 25% is a relatively low number. Like there's not gonna be much energy saved by the city and much enticement for developers to bring those projects to fruition. And so because of that, I was thinking it might make more sense to change the proposed max height to something like 8 stories or 9 stories instead of 6 stories in some situations. Thank you.
Great. Next is Marshall Bergman registering in support and wishing to speak from District 4 as well.
Hi there, my name is Marshall Bergman, and I'm also from right here downtown in District 4. I wanted to speak in support of the proposed housing plan and thank everyone who's worked on it and supported it. All three of these proposals will help to improve development in Madison and make housing more affordable for everyone who lives here. Streamlining the development process will help increase housing supply and help address the growing housing crisis that sees prices rising. As someone who lives here right in the heart of Madison, I welcome more growth and development in my neighborhood. These reforms are something that are good and necessary, and I'd like to thank those who support them once again.
Lily Butler from District 4 registering in support and wishing to speak.
Hello. Thanks for having me. I'm Lily Butler from District 4. Again, live downtown. But I'm thinking about this proposal, like looking further into my life. I do want to own a home one day. And I think everybody should be able to split up their lot if there's enough room. I like the idea of having like a quote unquote mother-in-law cottage for like my parents when they get older. I think it would really build community, even if it's not your parents. You know, having another community member so close that you can rely on is just a really beautiful vision, I think. I do have one question. You mentioned that it would be expanded to 6 of the single family housing districts, and I'm wondering why not all of them, or why not more? I think everybody should be able to have the opportunity to split up their lot, or you know, have the development process be easier on them. I am in support of all the proposals, so thank you so much.
And the remainder of the registrants do not wish to speak, but I can read their names into the record. So John Nguyen, registering in support from District 13, Nicholas Davies, District 15, registering in support, Josh Olson, District 6, registering in support, and Jane Flynn, District 3, registering in opposition.
Thank you so much. I think we could ask the committee now if the committee has any questions related to the comments brought up by registrants. Questions for registrants related to their comments. A little tongue-tied. Okay, and now we're ready again for questions for staff related to the three agenda items. Please go ahead.
Thank you. So I'll just ask some of the questions that registrants asked, and I think Megan, Jerry?
Jacob.
You might be best suited to answer these, but in terms of the lot coverage, can you explain why we're not changing that in this set of zoning proposals?
Yeah, that's a good question and a good observation. One of the things that I'll note is we have a number of zoning districts that have different standards based on the existing context within the city. And generally, as lots get smaller, the allowed lot cover percent gets higher to account for how buildings might fit relative to the size of the lot. So for example, in some of the districts where we have the smallest allowed minimum lot sizes, I think lot cover percent goes up to 75% in those cases. And in the case of some of the districts where we have the largest existing lots, lot cover is about 50% because that's a pretty generous number when you think about a 10,000 square foot lot, for example. So we didn't necessarily think that we needed to propose changing that today because we thought that those were pretty permissible lot coverage standards, but it's something we can take a look at just to confirm.
And then could I ask about how you arrived at the 4, 6, 8 stories for the various downtown zones?
Yeah, great question. So I just want to clarify that the map that I showed that provided examples of 4, 6, and 8 stories. Thank you. Actually, I left those slides up so that I could refer to them. Maybe I should just go back there. Right, so I think this is the map that you were referring to, Dalton. So this is actually just an example of what our conditional use thresholds are already in other parts of the city. So in some parts of the city, they're 4, 6, or 8 stories, depending on where the stars are located and how. Yes. Oh, okay. And how that relates to the sort of relative intensity of future development that is identified in our comprehensive plan. Within the downtown district, there's just one change for the DC and UMX district. We're proposing that buildings in these areas would be allowed to go up to 6 stories without requiring the conditional use process. The one exception to that would be the buildings fronting directly on State or King Street, where the 4-story would apply. So hopefully I didn't create too much confusion by showing that other map. So everything would be the 6 stories. And I don't know, Alder, if you want me to answer the last question. Okay. That's correct. So thank you for that observation, Lily. In most of the city's zoning districts, we already allow, in most of the city's residential zoning districts, we already allow 2-unit buildings. So this is proposing that in 6 of the districts where we have not historically allowed 2-unit buildings, that we would allow them. The Alder, if you heard him mention, there's a residential PD. It's kind of like the downtown PD district that I mentioned, where it's very specific to an individual site. But in general, we're aiming to allow 2 units in all residential districts.
Can I ask a follow-up to that question? So to phrase the registrant's question in a different way, outside of those, you said the PD residential districts, are there any other areas in the city that would, if this proposal were to go into effect, are there any remaining areas that are strictly single-family use as a permitted use?
I'll look to Jacob and Jenny, but I believe the answer is no. Yeah.
No, I would say no. I think the only areas where two units wouldn't be allowed are areas where housing in general just isn't allowed, like industrial areas and things like that.
Or I'll add one more caveat to that. In some of our districts, we actually try to encourage more intense development. So if single family is not permitted, sometimes two units are not permitted either.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions? Oh, please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for letting me last speak. This is a question regarding the duplexes or the split homes. In the presentation, they were talking about a 70. I know I'm kind of mixing also a question with the flag lots, but with a duplex, and I was going back and watching the press conference, a lot of the attention on these three changes in zoning. For again, this is the interest of promoting home ownership. For a duplex or a split home, can we have a ownership of both sides of the duplex? And then on top of that, can that lot be split so that each owner can own half the lot? Or is there a limit on the 70-foot limit on a street width? So I'm kind of mixing the flag lot as well as the duplexes, but I just, again, I'm seeing this as an opportunity for promoting more home ownership.
Yeah, I think I pulled up this image. It's a little bit off topic from the point of your question, but I think the image in the top left corner is maybe a good illustration to point to answer the first part of your question about the possibility for different units within a duplex to be owned independently. That's an example. The dotted line represents a property line that actually runs under the building. So you can imagine that each half of that building and the small lot that's underneath the building could each be independently owned. We call this a twin home typically in our code. And then as far as the flag lot is concerned, yes, the lot that is being divided is divided under standards that enable it to be a completely fee simple lot that could be owned separately from the lot that it was divided from.
Just for clarification, the twin home there, we can take, like, let's say a lot that's, I know, 70 feet wide and divide that into two 35 foot.
Yes. Yes. Okay. That's all correct.
Right. Okay. That wasn't clear in up to this point, at least not clear to me. So thank you.
Yeah. And I appreciate the question. That's actually something that's already allowed in our ordinance today. So the main change here is just that would be an option that would be allowed in places where two units had never been allowed before.
This is what we're talking about today. This is just streamlining that to make it easier.
In this case, it's enabling this as a housing choice in zoning districts where it wouldn't have been allowed before. Yep.
Thank you. Are there any other questions?
Thank you. Just one more question. For the backyard lots or the flagpole lots, when it comes to the orientation and the setbacks for the rear house, we have front yard, rear yard, and rear corner and side yard setbacks. Are those going to be determined based on the face of the backyard lot that is nearest to the street, or are they going to be considered as being parallel to the pole of the flag lot, if that makes sense?
Jacob, feel free to take it. I do think it makes sense. And I put this diagram up here that Heather made. This is an illustration of how this could kind of be laid out in a little bit more of a technical sense, and I think might help answer your question.
Yeah, and I think you were saying parallel to the pole. I took that to mean sort of rotated 90 degrees from the drawing on the left,
right?
There.
Yes.
Like taking it from the side, what we would consider the side. So yeah. I guess to answer that question, we would still consider that the side.
Okay.
The front would be the portion that abuts the property to the to the bottom that is fronting on the street.
Okay.
So it would, they would sort of be oriented in this, in the same way as far as setbacks are concerned.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further questions?
Yes. I might have been like mentally not getting it, but I felt like we glossed over the member of the public's question about like, why is 6 not 8 and 8 not 12 or whatever they actually said. Could we go back to that slide and you just run it through me for me one more time again? Because
so I don't want to distract us too much by this. The main point of sharing this was to just show how our current and what our proposed downtown conditional use threshold is relative to where, to other parts of the city. So we're not proposing to change these standards.
Sorry, not this
anywhere
slide.
Else in the
It was a different one.
Not this one?
No.
Okay.
So this one. So okay. I think kind of I took their question kind of as like, why is 6 not 8? And then why is, you know, like, how come it was 4 and how come it was 6? Just out of curiosity. Just minus the King Street stuff. I get that.
Right. Great question. So we looked at past development projects in the downtown districts, the two that we're talking about here, and we found that there's actually a really big discrepancy between projects that would fall under the threshold that we're proposing, so 6 stories and fewer, and projects that are over 6 stories. So the projects that are over 6 stories are typically quite large. And we're talking about, in some cases, there, I think there might've been 1 or 2 8 stories, but they get into like 10, 12, 14 story buildings. So they're much bigger. So what we were aiming to do is focus on these smaller mid-sized buildings and help to kind of make that process simpler without getting too far into the really large developments. Yeah. You're welcome.
Other questions from the committee?
If you could please go back to the slide with the showing existing permitted 2 units and the proposed changes. I believe the slide that you had showing the transit overlay district already answers this question, but I want to make sure that my understanding is correct.
This one?
That's the one.
Okay.
So do the changes in the proposed ordinance allowing 2 units by right in the yellow areas indicated on the map, do those changes impact any of the existing transit overlay or transit-oriented development overlay district?
That's a great question. We did not propose to make any changes within the transit-oriented overlay district.
Okay. So in other words, if within TOD, if there is a lot that as of right now is zoned for single family use, has the plus one from TOD to allow a duplex by right, this would not allow a triplex. Is that correct?
Jacob, do you want to weigh in there? Yeah.
That is correct. Yeah, the bump is just, it's basically making that TOD, what TOD did to allow duplexes,
okay,
citywide. It's not addressing TOD, but some of the things like the lot divisions, the flag lots, those would still apply obviously in the TOD areas too. So
okay. Do have another question as well. So it seems like the sort of problem that we're trying to address with the changes to the flag lot are really regarding like the size of lots and the types of lots that were able to build on and where those lots are allowed. I guess my question is, has the city explored sort of broader changes that aren't as specific to subdividing lots, but rather more general changes on just decreasing minimum lot sizes kind of more broadly to permit, you know, the creation of new lots in even more areas throughout the city?
So one thing I'll mention is that, gosh, was it earlier this year, maybe late last year, we did make some changes to help standardize our minimum lot size requirements for 1 and 2 family homes, wherever they were allowed previously, with the aim to try to enable, you know, either a 1 or a 2 family home to fit on the same size lot. Previously, in some cases, you needed much larger lots for a 2 family. So that is one thing that we have done recently. And one of the things I'll say is that as we think about Housing Forward, there are a lot of different questions that have come up about standards for development citywide. And we are doing some research into the issue of lot sizes in general, but I don't have any specific details for you about that right now.
Okay, great. Any more questions from the committee? All right. If it's okay with the body, I'd actually like to ask a question. Any objections to that? Okay. My question is about 88735, and it's specifically about the removal of the requirement that house numbers for all lot signs be visible from the public street. I'd like to talk about the public safety aspects of that, fire and police finding addresses and locations as needed.
So this is, I would say that this change falls under a category of something that we're trying to do as a cleanup whenever we have the opportunity to in our zoning and other codes. Historically, we put a lot of requirements into our zoning standards in particular because we may not have had other sections of city ordinance that gave us specific requirements for how things like addressing or other things like trees are another good example. So as the city's processes have matured and other agencies have adopted standards for certain things, we're trying to remove some of the duplication out of the ordinance, to remove some duplication, but also to make sure that we're not inadvertently creating opportunities for conflict if other parts of the city's codes change. So I believe this change was suggested because other agencies have jurisdiction over addressing lots that doesn't fall within the zoning or subdivision code. So we want to defer to that instead of having that in this section of the code.
Thank you. That's very helpful. And then just a follow-up, do you know how lots like this would be numbered? Or those numbers
I don't know
would be
that
displayed?
Off the top of my head. Yeah, I don't know that off the top of my head, but it's something we could look into.
Okay, yep. Thank you. Okay, great. Well, thank you for the discussion. Thank you for the presentation. Thank you to the members of the public who spoke and who weighed in. Let's take up item number 388736, amending various tables within chapter 28 of the Madison General Ordinances to permit two family, twin, and two unit buildings in all districts where single family dwellings are also allowed. Do I have a motion to approve this amendment?
Motion to recommend to Plan Commission to approve.
Thank you. Very elegant. Any seconds?
Second.
Thank you. Any discussion?
If I could speak to the motion, this is a good change. I know we haven't seen many duplexes built in the TOD changes, but a lot of the TOD areas are also in areas where it honestly just makes sense to build more than a two unit. I think opening this up citywide is going to be a good change. I did want to just comment pretty quickly on some of the things in the comprehensive plan that I think this helps meet. So for the low residential uses in the comprehensive plan, it talks about building with a house-like context and new developments should have at least two development types. And it explicitly calls out in the uses for low residential that two units are generally allowed everywhere or should be. This helps align the zoning code with the initiatives in our comprehensive plan. It also meets a lot of the other strategies like increasing the amount of available housing choice, creating a mix of housing types, increasing the total amount of available housing, increasing permitted uses, and having a wider mix of housing types, sizes, and costs. And I also think it actually meets strategy six, which is rehabilitation, in part because it's not uncommon for someone to take what would be a like tear down single family home and instead rebuild it as a duplex or not rebuild it, but sort of gut renovate it as a duplex. And so I think this meets a lot of the things that we're trying to go for in our comprehensive plan. To your question earlier, Mike, I shouldn't address members of the committee directly, but I would like to see the city go further in TOD as well, in terms of just the minimum number of permitted units. And I think that's something we'll probably see in the future. So.
Thank you so much. Any further discussion on the motion? Seeing none, I would actually like to ask our expert how we would take a vote on this.
First, you can ask if there's any opposition to just taking, you know, having a unanimous vote. And if anyone wants to request a roll call, you can indicate that to Chair Allen.
Thank you so much. Are there any objections to a unanimous vote? Seeing none.
Could we just clarify if that vote is in favor of the motion?
For the motion.
Okay. All right.
Okay. So I think we've got it. Thank you. So agenda item 3, we have approved to recommend to the Plan Commission to adopt. Yes? Okay. All right. Thank you so much. Let's take up agenda item 4. 88735, amending sections 28.135 and 16.236D of the MGOs related to deep residential lots to facilitate easier development. Do I have a motion?
I will make a motion to move to recommend a Plan Commission to adopt.
Thank you so much. Do we have a second?
Second.
Thank you. And discussion.
I have a curveball.
Curveball.
I would like to also make an amendment or move to make an amendment to change the average depth from 80 feet to 75 feet and introduce a standard 15 foot front yard setback in all rear lots.
Okay. Can you restate that just so everyone can catch that?
Yeah, you can show the image. Yes. So the motion is to amend the lines of 88735 so that instead of an 80 foot average lot depth, it is a 75 foot average lot depth, and introduce a standard 15 foot front yard setback for the rear lots.
Okay. We can discuss the, do we have a second on that motion? That
second.
Amendment, a motion to amend?
Second.
Thank you. And so I think we should discuss the amendment first.
Can I ask a question on the amendment?
Please do.
Because I think that would be next. City employees generally, I don't know who specifically this would be for, and to the chair, would you agree with this amendment if you were able to vote? I like the way you frame that question. We don't typically get asked questions that way. The way I'll answer it is to say that we have been in communication with the alder about this question. And we discussed the request to reduce the required minimum lot depth from 80 feet to 75 feet, and staff is supportive, is fine with this change. I do have a couple images here that will just help kind of show what the alder is proposing. And the suggestion to standardize the front setback for the rear lot was one that staff offered if the committee is supportive of this change to the minimum lot depth. So I'll show this image just to show what we mean. These are a couple examples of real lots, and considering how from the smallest kind of condition to the largest kind of condition, if a new lot was created that met the minimum standards of 80 feet depth and met all the requirements for front and rear setbacks on both of the properties, this is what the resulting kind of building footprint could look like, the area that's remaining on a lot where a building could be placed. If the lots get smaller,
the rear setback in particular does get a little bit smaller because it's a ratio of the lot size. But you can see how it can actually start to get a little bit trickier to make everything sort of fit. And so what we essentially proposed is that we would, I'm going to walk over here, that we would consider a standard setback for this area right here so that somebody could actually achieve a lot division and still have a buildable area on the back lot that's created after they take the setbacks out of the equation. So what this could mean in some of our districts, the front yard setback is already 15 feet. It ranges anywhere from 15 to 30 feet, depending on what zoning district you're in. So this would standardize it at 15 feet for all zoning districts for just for the rear lot itself, not for the front lot that exists. That would maintain anywhere from 45 plus feet, possibly between the two buildings that could be on these two lots that are created, but would just give people a little bit more flexibility for how both of those lots could be divided and there could still be a buildable area that wouldn't interfere with those setbacks. So this is what it would look like if both of those changes were applied.
Thank you for that. Are there any follow-ups? Please do.
Thank you. So I introduce this motion in discussion with Alder Martinez Rutherford. And if I could, talking about it in terms of average lot depth makes it sound really complicated, but essentially the change would be right now you need a 160 foot deep lot to split it into two, because then the two lots need to have an average depth of 80 feet each. 80 times two is 160. This is changing it so it's 100 foot lot depth. I think that's the more minor change compared to the standardized 15 foot front setback. I think that's a bit more important, and front setbacks serve a variety of purposes. They are, I mean, you know, in some cases they're designed to just require you to take up more land because it makes the area seem wealthier. But in a better light, front yard setbacks are about reserving space for future street developments, expansions, setting aside area for utilities, and creating a more homogeneous look for areas. In terms of reducing, or as Megan mentioned, our front yard setbacks range from 10 to 30 feet for the residential districts, and reducing that to 15 feet, I don't think would impede any of the goals of why we have front yard setbacks, but it does make it a bit easier because you are behind a house that already has a large rear yard setback. And so there's, you know, a 15 foot front yard setback for a rear house is really going to be much more than 15 feet from a building, as shown on some of those slides. So those are the reasons why I'm introducing this.
Yes, please go ahead. Thank you.
Chair, I'd like to ask that staff clarify, so I might have misunderstood, the amendment is to standardize the front yard setback for the rear lot to 15 feet. I believe it was just mentioned that the current front yard setback can vary anywhere from between 10 to 30 feet. I'd just like to clarify that for lots that do have a front yard setback any less than 15 feet, that wouldn't be increased to 15. If we're standardizing.
Sorry, could you say the very last part of your question just one more time?
So any lots that as of right now would only be subject to a 10 foot front yard setback, or anything less than a 15 foot front yard setback, that wouldn't be increased with this amendment.
We are not proposing to change the front yard setbacks for existing lots. Let me just walk back over here. So what you're asking, I think, is a really good technical question. And Jacob and I were just whispering to make sure that there's a detail that we may need to look into a little bit here. We would not propose changing anything about the front yard setbacks that already are dictated by our zoning code. And that will depend on what zoning district in the city you're in. We were looking at this change primarily from the context of our residential zoning districts. And I think in our residential zoning districts outside of downtown, the smallest front yard setback is 15 feet already. I think what we may just want to do is make sure that if for some reason somebody had a single lot that they were looking to divide, like in the downtown residential districts, that this wouldn't actually be a bigger setback than those districts. But I think in general, this would make a standard setback just for these rear lots that's the same as the smallest front setback in our residential zoning districts. If that makes sense, that's a lot of, okay.
It does make sense. I'd appreciate if staff could look into that and ensure that for no lots, the front yard setback would be increased with this amendment. Thank you.
Yeah, just to add one thing to that. I also misspoke. I don't think in our residential districts, we have 10-foot front yard setbacks. It can be less if the average, we'll follow up, but 10 feet is for, you keep saying feet as a unit of measurement and yards as a place to put a house, and you get it mixed up a lot. The 10-foot is for mixed use in some of the other zoning districts, so I misspoke there.
Thank you, and you have a question?
Oh, yeah, thank you. In one of the slides, I think it's slide eight, when you talked about the number of lots that would meet the right size for a backyard lot, with this change in to 15 feet, would that, do you see that number, I'm assuming that number increasing in the city, and I guess maybe how much?
So looking at how the setbacks would influence the ability to divide lots is a very site lot by lot kind of specific question. So we're not able to analyze that at a detailed level. This map though, if you can see any difference from the one on your screen, is an update based on the Alder's proposal to reduce that lot depth from 80 feet to 75 feet. So we ran this map again and estimate that about 500 to 600 additional lots could meet the basic size requirements to be divided if you were to reduce the depth alone. So we don't have a good sense of how that 15-foot setback would impact it. But it'd be from within that universe of 500 to 600 properties.
So. Okay, yeah, so just not, we're not talking a huge difference at all. This is just okay. So the reason I'm here tonight is just so I don't take up so much time on the council floor in the evening. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there any further discussion on the amendment? Okay. Would the committee be comfortable taking up a unanimous approach to this amendment? Okay. Any objection? Any objections to the amendment? Okay, I think that counts, right? No. Okay, so the committee has adopted the amendment to the motion. And we can go back to the main motion, which is the recommendation towards the Plan Commission for this this amendment to the ordinances itself. So with the incorporated new amendment. So let's take a unanimous vote on that, if that's all right. Seeing agreement, no objections. I think we are good. We have adopted that. Thank you. So we've adopted the amendment to the recommending the amendment to the ordinances to the Plan Commission with the Alder's proposed amendment. Okay, thank you so much. And now we can move on to agenda item 588737, amending sections in chapter 28 of the Madison General Ordinances related to downtown and urban districts to allow more permitted uses within the districts. Do I have a motion?
I move to recommend adoption of the amendment to Plan Commission.
Thank you. Do we have a second? Second. Thank you. Discussion on the item. Please go ahead.
Just to discuss the motion a little bit. In my mind, the even though this change would only impact about 25% of future projects, I think that at least my interpretation of the city's focus with this amendment is to support the sort of mid-scale development. Certainly, we've seen many large-scale projects that don't seem to be struggling too much to get approved for the downtown area, but for this sort of mid-size projects, I think there are, 25% is could be quite a few depending on the year and what projects might be proposed. And I think these, we're talking about five-story and six-story developments that might have otherwise been caught in the approval process not made it through to actually being built. So these are, mid-size apartment options that I think would fit comfortably in the downtown area where there's already, as we discussed, buildings up to, 12, 14 stories. So just allowing some of those smaller players to more easily navigate the market, I think is beneficial for providing folks with more housing opportunities.
Thank you. Further discussion? Is the committee ready to take a vote? Can that vote be a unanimous vote? Okay. Seeing no objections to the motion, we are now approving recommending 88737 to recommend adoption to the Plan Commission of these amendments to the ordinances. Is there anything that I misspoke about in that last one? Okay. All right. Thank you so much. I believe we're ready to adjourn. Do I have a motion? Or did we miss something?
I just have one other discussion point. I would like to move that the Housing Policy Committee rules be amended to permit chairs to permit to participate in making motions or discussions.
Ooh, I like that.
Second.
I think let's put that item on another agenda just as a formality.
Great.
Since it wasn't on this agenda, but
great. Yeah. We can ask staff you. To put that on the future agenda. Thank you so much. All right. Seeing no other items, do we have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Moved. Second?
Second.
Unanimous? All right. We are adjourned. Thank you so much. Thank you to the staff, and thank you very much to the members of the public who participated or submitted comments in a different way.